Welcome to A Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're jumping into a novel that's, well, it's more than just a book, isn't it? It's an experience. Kurt Vonnegut Jr.'s Slaughterhouse-Five, or The Children's Crusade, A Duty Dance with Death.
Absolutely.
Published back in 1969, right in the thick of the Vietnam War era, and it landed like a bombshell, really. It became the anti-war statement for a whole generation almost overnight.
It really did.
So our mission today in this deep dive is to kind of unpack its unique style, get to know these unforgettable, sometimes pretty bewildering characters, and tackle its big themes, basically giving you a shortcut to understanding this major piece of American lit.
And it definitely needs that deep dive. Vonnegut's voice is just, yeah. There's nothing else quite like it. This mix of, you know, sharp satire, really dark humor, but also this deep, deep humanism.
Yeah.
Even when he's talking about the absolute worst things imaginable, you know right away. From page one, that he's tossing out the usual rules of storytelling.
Mm, completely.
And that's what keeps people coming back to it, I think, that constant intrigue.
Totally agree. And to really get the book, you have to understand Vonnegut himself. Kurt Vonnegut Jr., born in Indianapolis, German-American parents. But here's where it gets crucial. His own experience as a POW in World War II.
Right.
Captured during the Battle of the Bulge. And then the experience that defined so much for him. Surviving the Allied firebombing of Dresden in 1945. He only survived because he was sheltered deep underground in a meat locker. Schlachterhund.
It's hard to even picture the scale of that. Dresden, known as the Florence of the Elbe, just incredible architecture.
Mm.
And it was just incinerated, turned to rubble.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 25,000 people killed. That experience, it wasn't just part of his life. It became, like you said, the absolute core of his writing, haunted him for decades before he could really write about it in this way.
And he's more than just a war novelist, though. He's kind of a philosopher on human stupidity, maybe, a satirist of American culture, definitely, and a real pioneer of metafiction.
That is self-aware writing, yeah.
Exactly. Where the story reminds you it is a story. Think Cat's Cradle, Breakfast of Champions. You always hear him. Slaughterhouse-Five, funny enough, got mixed reviews at first. People were thrown by the non-linear
stuff. Well, understandable, maybe.
But it caught on fast. Became a huge bestseller, the anti-war novel.
And that subtitle, The Children's Crusade, A Duty Dance with Death, it tells you so much right away, doesn't it?
It really does.
It just strips away any idea of glory. War becomes this awful, childish dance performed by kids, basically. Mm-hmm. Young men who have no idea what they're doing, heading towards nothing sensible. It's bleak.
Very bleak. Okay, so with that context, let's get into the story itself. Billy Pilgrim, he's our main guy. An optometrist, lives in Ilium, New York, and he becomes unstuck in time.
Mm.
Which isn't just a gimmick, is it? It feels like Vonnegut's way of showing us what trauma does to memory, how it fragments everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Billy's life jumps between three main tracks.
Yeah.
His horrific time as a soldier in WWII, his sort of ordinary, maybe even bland, post-war suburban life, and then his supposed abduction by aliens, the Tralfamadorians.
Right, you have to picture it. One second, he's maybe adjusting someone's glasses. The next, boom, he's back in the freezing cold, middle of a battle in Europe.
Or a memory from the war triggers a jump forward, and suddenly he's in this alien zoo exhibit. It's completely disorienting, and that's key to understanding him, his internal state.
Mm-hmm.
The real conflicts for Billy isn't, you know, fighting Nazis. It's his internal struggle. How do you cope with seeing absolute horror, things that make no sense? It broke his sense of time, of reality.
And that break leads to this huge philosophical question in the book. Do we actually have free will? Or are we just, like the Tralfamadorians say, insects trapped in amber, all moments just existing?
Yeah.
Billy's passive acceptance of that idea,
yeah.
It's partly how he survives the trauma, but it's also Vonnegut subtly questioning our own sense of agency, maybe, finding comfort in fate.
It's a profound way to manage the unmanageable.
And Vonnegut even puts himself in the book at the start, right? Struggling to write about Dresden, calling the soldiers babies, reminds us this is personal.
That metafictional touch. It grounds the sci-fi elements in something very real, very human. Sets the tone perfectly.
So Billy's time travel really shapes how he sees everything, including the people around him. Let's talk characters. Billy himself, he's our center, described as tall, weak, and shaped like a bottle of Coca-Cola. Totally unfit for war, survives purely by luck, it seems. His journey isn't about becoming a hero, it's just about surviving psychologically, holding on to that Tralfamadorian view like a lifeline.
And it's such a strange arc. naive soldier, then this successful but kind of empty optometrist, then this old guy talking about aliens. Is he enlightened? Is he just broken? Vonnegut leaves that wide open.
Deliberately ambiguous.
Then you have characters like Roland Weary, this awful, delusional guy obsessed with martial glory who blames Billy for his death.
Ugh, Weary.
And Paul Lazzaro, the car thief who vows revenge on Billy, a threat hanging over decades.
Yeah.
It shows how war's poison just lingers, you know? It doesn't end when the shooting stops.
Which raises that question about justice or the lack of it, especially with Edgar Derby.
Oh, Derby. Yes.
He's this decent middle-aged teacher, kind of a moral anchor in the chaos. He survives the absolute hell of the Dresden bombing.
Survives the firestorm.
Only to be executed, shot, for picking up a teapot from the ruins. A teapot. Oh.
It's absurdity cranked up to 11. It's horrifyingly funny and just horrifying. That one moment says so much about war's insane logic or lack thereof.
Exactly. It's pure Vonnegut. Then there's Valencia, Billy's wife. She sort of represents that empty post-war American dream, doesn't she? Material comfort, but no real depth.
Mm-hmm. A hollow prosperity. And contrasting her is Montana Wildhack, the actress Billy meets in the Trial Femme Adorian Zoo. Maybe she symbolizes a real connection, real acceptance for him, even if it's all in his head or theirs.
Right. This strange space of acceptance. And the Trial Femme Adorians themselves, they're not really characters like the others. They're more like philosophical concepts given voice.
Yeah, mouthpieces for an idea.
They see all time at once. Death isn't real to them. It's this deterministic view that takes away free will, but maybe also takes away guilt, grief, a way out intellectually.
It gives Billy a structure, an order, for something that feels utterly chaotic and meaningless, even if that order means giving up control.
So the plot itself, it's not linear at all. It's fractured, like Billy's mind. Vonnegut even starts and ends the book talking about his own struggle to write it, promising Mary O'Hare he won't make war look heroic.
And it's interesting how he throws the Trial Femme Adorians in right near the beginning, isn't it? Before we even really get deep into the war stuff. Why do that, you think?
Good question. Maybe to give us the framework immediately. He introduces the abduction, their whole philosophy, all moments exist, death's an illusion, so it goes.
Right. Setting the stage.
It prepares you for the time jumps, for the way the story's going to unfold.
Mm.
Because Billy's story is this collage. Moments from the war getting lost, captured with Weary, the awful train journey, arriving in Dresden.
Which was beautiful before.
Exactly. And then moments from his later life, the optometry practice, marriage, the plane crash, all mixed together.
And the firebombing itself. That's the horrific center. Hiding in the meat locker, Schlachthofunt, while the city burns, coming out to that moonscape.
Unimaginable.
And then having to dig through bodies.
Huh?
And right after that, Derby's execution for the teapot. The ultimate pointless act after surviving Armageddon.
After the war, Billy goes back home, becomes successful, gets married, has kids, lives the suburban life. But Vonnegut presents it all as kind of empty, spiritually hollow, and always interrupted by these time jumps.
Yeah, he can't escape. He even finds solace, sort of, in Kilgore Trout's sci-fi novels while he's in a veterans hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Another Vonnegut signature.
Mm-hmm. Later, there's the plane crash. Billy's the only survivor. And then Valencia dies in a car crash rushing to see him. It's just relentless loss.
And after that, he goes public.
Sure.
Goes on the radio, talks about the Trial Femme Adorians. His daughter, Barbara, is horrified, thinks he's lost his mind completely.
Which maybe he has. Or maybe he's found the only truth that makes sense to him. And then there's this time in the zoo with Montana Wildhack. Maybe his only real human connection, real or not.
A strange kind of peace, maybe.
The plot kind of ends, or circles back, with Billy knowing he'll be assassinated by someone sent by Lazzaro. War is violence reaching across decades.
A long shadow.
In the very last image. The ruins of Dresden and a bird asking, "Pootie-weet," just emptiness. Meaninglessness.
It hangs there, doesn't it? That sound.
Okay, so themes. What's Vonnegut really getting at here? First, obviously, the dehumanizing nature of war. He just demolishes any idea of glory. War is a machine. Humans are objects. Dresden is the prime example. It's not about heroism. It's about surviving this indifferent cosmic process.
And tied right into that is the big question. Determinism versus free will. The Trial Femme Adorian view. Everything's already happened, and Billy just accepts it. It's how he copes with trauma. Yeah. It's a radical perspective on fate.
Which leads to the arbitrariness of death and suffering. That phrase, "so it goes," repeated over and over after every single death. It's not callous. It's a recognition of randomness. It challenges any idea of a grand plan or justice. Death just is.
So it goes.
Right, and it smashes the failure of traditional heroism. Billy is the opposite of a hero. Derby, the good man, dies pointlessly. Vonnegut is tearing down the myths that get people killed.
Absolutely. And it's such a powerful look at post-traumatic stress, even before we maybe had that exact term so widely. Billy's time travel is like this complex psychological defense mechanism. He has to build his own reality to survive when the old one shattered.
Mm-hmm. Building meaning systems.
And then there's the critique of hollow post-war America. Billy gets rich, has a nice house, but none of it heals him. It's Vonnegut looking at this prosperous society built perhaps on ignoring the trauma underneath.
Let's shift to how he tells this story. The style. That narrative structure, non-linear, jumping around, it feels like trauma memory, doesn't it? Yeah. Fragmented, unpredictable.
It really does. And having Vonnegut pop in as the author, reminding us he's telling the story, it adds another layer. Makes you think about memory, storytelling itself.
And the repetition. So it goes like 106 times, apparently. It becomes this mantra, almost soothing in its acceptance. And other things repeat too. Billy's description, the barbershop quartet, creates this cyclical feeling.
Like things echoing through time. And the sci-fi stuff, the aliens, the time travel, they're not just there for kicks, they're metaphors,
yeah.
Right? Ways to explore philosophy, trauma, different ways of seeing things without being tied to strict realism.
Let's him ask the big questions.
Exactly. And his trademark, dark humor and irony. Finding absurdity in the absolute worst situations. It's not making light of it. It's a way to cope, to stay human, maybe. It highlights the gap between official stories and the messy truth.
Oh, definitely. And the symbolism is so rich. The slaughterhouse, obviously, Billy being an optometrist helping others see, but his own vision is fractured. The alien zoo, the blue and ivory feet of the frozen dead soldiers, and pooty wheat at the end. It all means something more.
Loads to unpack there. And he does it all with this deceptively simple language, almost childlike sometimes, especially describing terrible things. That contrast just makes the horror hit harder. Stark.
Let's pull out a few key quotes so it goes. We've talked about it, but its power is in that repetition. It shifts from just noting a death to this deep acceptance, maybe even surrender.
Yeah, it becomes the rhythm of the book. Then everything was beautiful and nothing hurt. Billy's epitaph for himself. It's just this heartbreaking wish, isn't it? Captures that longing for peace against the reality of pain.
So poignant. And the Tralfamadorian view. All moments, past, present, and future, always have existed, always will exist. That's their core idea. Comforting, maybe, because nothing is truly lost. But it also erases choice, responsibility.
A double-edged sword, philosophically. And Vonnegut's own voice. There's nothing intelligent to say about a massacre. You feel his struggle, his frustration, why he had to write this strange book, because normal words fail?
Yeah, the limits of language. Which leads to the final, pooty, wheat, what can you say? Maybe nature just chirps. Indifferent to our tragedies. Leaves you hanging.
It really does. The emotional hit of this book is complex. Sadness, dark laughter, but mostly this deep empathy for Billy. He's so broken, so gentle. The horror feels so real because it's described so plainly, so matter-of-factly. It's chilling.
So wrapping up, what's the lasting impact for you, the listener? I think Slaughterhouse-Five manages to make trauma understandable without cheapening it. It shows us these frameworks, like Billy's alien philosophy, that people might need just to keep going after the worst happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it validates feeling disconnected, both part of humanity and alienated from it. Anyone who's felt that, maybe from trauma, maybe just from thinking too hard about existence, can connect with Billy.
And it absolutely forces us to question those easy narratives about war, about heroes, about nations. It makes you look at your own assumptions, but without losing compassion for the individuals caught up in it all.
Yeah, it's a book that addresses the absolute extremes of experience without being exploitative or overly sentimental. It's part memorial, part confession, part philosophical puzzle.
A unique achievement, really.
Ultimately, Slaughterhouse-Five isn't just an anti-war novel. It's a profound meditation on memory, fate, and survival. A testament to the enduring human struggle to find meaning and compassion amidst the chaos of a seemingly absurd existence.
Well said. It grapples with the biggest questions in the most unexpected ways.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.